You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
Now, they're saying I should think stuff with you too. They're saying something is wrong with me.
To be so cynical.
Practice.
Thank you for listening to Positive Cynicism. I do appreciate your listenership, and slowly but surely we are building a podcast empire here. I have a feeling by the next 100 years, we're really going to be on to something. Today's episode I'm actually excited about because this is when I initially formulated the idea for Positive Cynicism. This is an episode that has always been on the table of episodes I wanted to do. I get to interview a friend of mine who runs a charity called For Kids' Sake, or she's the local chairperson, I believe. We'll talk more about that in the interview. An organization called For Kids' Sake, which helps orphans in Bangladesh, and the organization has a 5K, superhero 5K coming up on September 29th. So if you're listening to this before then, there's still plenty of time to donate to the cause. And if you're listening to it after September 29th, well, they have other fundraising options in the spring, and they're always, you know, looking for donations to help. But we talk more about what the organization does, how you can be a part of it. And it's one of these episodes that I like because my whole idea when I started this podcast was to help spread positivity, or getting people involved with just helping others. It's, you know, I've said it before on the show, I think we as a society are actually really good people. Unfortunately, it's more of the negative aspects of our society that steal the spotlight most times. So this is a chance to turn that spotlight back onto a positive factor and really try to make a little bit of difference if we can. So after this commercial break, I will be joined by Shema Raputo, and I hope you enjoy the interview.
Hi, this is Greg Mahochko, the co-founder of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network and host of the Nerds United Podcast. And what will you hear on the Nerds United Podcast? Well, you'll hear conversations with me and artists or writers, creators of comic books. You'll hear panel discussions from some various regional comic cons. You'll hear cosplay. You'll have celebrity interviews. It all happens here on Nerds United. You never know what to expect. Sometimes you might just get into a half hour of me rambling aimlessly, sometimes with a little aim, kind of like guys in the urinals. And never mind. But you'll get some ramblings of me, my thoughts, and maybe even some suggestions on some books to read, pick up at your local comic book store. That's where it all starts, your local comic book store. So head on over there, grab a handful of comics, and put on Nerds United, either in the car or while you're reading, and enjoy the show.
Great. As I mentioned in the intro, I am joined by Shema Raputo, and I always feel like I mispronounce your name and butcher your name so badly. So
that's pretty close. Okay. Shema Raputo.
Okay. You are the chairperson for?
I'm the director of the For Kids' Sake fundraising program.
Okay, For Kids' Sake. And you're based in Carbondale, Illinois, but this is a worldwide organization, correct?
Yes, interestingly enough, we are headquartered in Carbondale, Illinois. And we do have a branch in Germany and Switzerland, small branches. And we have people, kind of individual groups fundraising throughout the U.S., and then, of course, we support an international cause in Bangladesh. And in Bangladesh itself, there are many fundraisers and donors and supporters that we partner with.
Okay. And how long has the organization been around?
For Kids' Sake really got going in the 1990s. And it was at a very casual basis, just whatever could be raised to support. And it really got more formalized in around 2008, 2009. That's the fundraising side of it. Now, the people that we support in Bangladesh, those orphanages and schools, are much more established. The founder was a Bangladeshi man, and he started them in the 1970s and 80s, was the majority of them that he founded. He founded many all over the country. Although his first one was actually in the 1940s. So we've been doing this for a long time.
Well, now, we've talked before, obviously. We've been friends for many years, more than actually probably realized.
I know.
But one thing that I found interesting, because we were talking over the summer when I was back in Illinois, and you were explaining the organization to me a little bit more. And you deal with orphans in Bangladesh, but when you say orphans, I get an image of, I guess, American orphans, which are, you know, parentless children. But that's not exactly the same situation in Bangladesh, am I correct?
A lot of the kids that we support are what we call single-parent orphans. So they are extremely poor to start off with. I mean, barely getting by as a family. And then when one parent leaves or dies, then they're left usually at a place where they can't afford to take care of their kids anymore. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Like, I mean, because the orphanages aren't, I think you said earlier in previous conversation, that it's not an orphanage where the kids necessarily live, but it's more of a some do stay there, but they also have a home that they go to occasionally and come back for food, school, or, you know, just the necessities of life.
Yeah, actually, there's two different kind of services we offer. So we do have 550 orphans that live between five different facilities, and they are living there full time.
Okay.
Now, they often will have some extended family that they can visit, like, on holidays. And that would be aunts or uncles, or maybe they do have one parent that they will still go visit on the holidays. Not all of them have somebody they can go to, but a lot of them do have some extended family. Now, then what I think you're confusing is that then we have 4,000 students who go to our schools.
Okay.
And so whereas all the orphan children go to the schools that we opened, we have a huge number of kids who are not living at our orphanage on a day-to-day basis, but who are coming to our facilities every day to for their education.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, I guess.
So, yeah, there's yes. Two levels of service.
Okay. And so, well, going off of that, then the services that you provide, when people donate money and the money that you raise, it goes for schooling and health care, correct?
We have kind of our major areas. One is our basic needs. For us, that is the most important thing, is to make sure that the orphans have their basic needs. So that's all their food. We give them new clothes every year, making sure they have their bed, making sure that the facility that they're in is sound and that they're safe, and making sure that we have enough money to pay caretakers. And that provides them with, you know, this safe environment and provides all their basic needs. And then they will get health care, free health care as needed. And then also they attend our schools, which we have like these award-winning schools. So they're getting an incredible education. So for us, those are the basic necessities. And that is what we are based on. We make sure that like these things are covered. And the next kind of pool that donations will go into are when we have special projects. And that could be, for example, like opening up a girls' dormitory. That was something we did a few years ago, and we had special funds raised in order to build this new building for the girls' dormitory. This last spring, we had a health campaign, and we needed two wells built for the kids. And so then we had these kind of special projects where funds can go. And then the third place that they go is to our businesses. We have 13 different income-generating projects, we call them, or small businesses, that are mostly agricultural-based, and all of income from those businesses goes right back into the operations of the orphanages. And then, in addition to that, in terms on the school side, what you're supporting is teacher salaries. Now, a lot of the teachers have a certification from the government, and a big chunk of their salary is being paid by the government. However, we supplement that with their salaries, which is part of why we have the best teachers and we're able to have end up having year after year some of the best education in the country.
And I don't know, I'm kind of going to be jumping around all over the place here, so thoughts come to me. I've had the conversation before with people about when we here in America say people are poor, there's a definition, there's a difference between American poor and worldly poor. And, you know, here we think of, oh, I'm poor, and it means I'm still on the iPhone 6. I can't get the iPhone 8, or, you know, I've got the PS3, not the PS4. And I, you know, like, I believe on your website and in your flyers, you mentioned how much it costs to support, you know, like 1 year of schooling or food for a year for these students. And I think it brings everything back into perspective. And I don't have that information in front of me. I'm sure you're more probably off the cuff can tell me a little better what the cost would be.
Yeah, so that is one of the most, I think, rewarding things about working on this project is how far the money can go and the level of impact that we can have. So in terms of dollars, how you break that down is it takes $500 to support one child for a whole year. So all the basic necessities that I mentioned, we can provide all of that for a child for $500. Now, if you think about that, that's three meals a day, 365 days a year. That is over 1,000 meals that is included in that $500. That is new clothes, that is school books, helping to pay for the caretaker salaries, helping to upkeep the maintenance of the building. All that can be done with $500. That's one small example. Let's see, another example is for $10,000, which is something you've kind of referred to, that can feed one of our medium-sized orphanages is 100 children. Mm-hmm. That can feed all the children their meal for a year with the $10,000 donation. Another small orphanage we have, it's in a really rural area of Bangladesh. And when I say different sizes, like our largest orphanage has 180-plus kids, and our smallest orphanage has 15. So they range drastically in size, and the orphanage that has 15 children is in a very rural area. So it's not always comparable on terms of the expenses, but the most rural, simplest project we have with 15 orphans, their operating budget is $7,000 a year. Everything every one of those kids needs and a salary for a caretaker, and it's mind-blowing. That's $7,000. Can do that.
Yeah, that is. I'm sitting here calculating how much I spend between rent and food just on a monthly basis. And
right.
It's insane. Yeah. I had a question regarding Bangladesh. I probably should have looked this up before starting this conversation. I'm not real familiar with Bangladesh off the top of my head. So for anyone else listening who is geographically challenged, as myself, can you kind of explain the landscape or the location of Bangladesh?
Yeah, it's in the kind of northeast corner of India, and it's actually surrounded by India on three sides, and then the fourth side goes into the Bay of Bengal. So it's... It used to be a part of India, and it is about the size of Illinois. It's actually slightly smaller than our state of Illinois. It's a delta. There's so much water there. There's so many rivers there. It's low lands, very close to sea level, and it's a very tropical environment. They have palm trees, and they have the monsoon season, and so a little bit of a different weather pattern than we have. It's nice and hot. It is, it's one of the most densely populated countries in the world, especially Dhaka City, the capital city. There's over 170 million people now who are living there in this country that's smaller than our state of Illinois. And in America, there's about 320 million people spread out all over all 50 states. So over half of those people living in Illinois, you can imagine, causes some lack of resources.
I would say. Yeah. And you have, like you said, mentioned orphanages all over the area. It's not just one location.
Yeah, we have six different locations. They're kind of clustered, three in the central area and three farther south. And we hope to expand the kind of care we can give. As I mentioned, the original founder really helped a lot of different villages start orphanages and schools. He wasn't always the one that stayed around and continued to maintain them, but he would help. People would come to him all the time. Can you help us start one? And then they would keep it going. And now he passed away in 1995, and we're having some of those orphanages and schools and those facilities come back to us, you know, 20 plus years later, saying, "Do you guys could we use some support at this point?" And so we're looking to be able to go back and help some of those and provide some support back.
And do you yourself go over to Bangladesh often, or?
Yes, yeah, I went a few years ago and hoping to go next year. We, but somebody from our organization will go every year.
Every year.
Somebody will go every year. So and you, sometimes we rotate different people who will go, and sometimes depending on the political climate, we may hold back until things are safe.
Gotcha. So you see, like, firsthand, the results of your the contributions, and this isn't like just sending money away and hoping or expecting things to go one way. For anyone, you know, who wants to donate or thinking about donation, it is more, it's hands on to make sure things are being done properly.
Yeah, there is definitely accountability in the system. We are, you know, like I said, we're visiting every year. We are very big on documentation, photos and videos. So we're getting a stream of photos and videos, and as well as written reports and financial reports every week from Bangladesh. So we're seeing it that way. And, you know, in addition to going and putting our eyes on it there. Yeah, exactly. Very hands-on. That's a good way to say it. And at the same time, it's run by Bangladeshis. We're not trying to come in and take over and run it for them, but we do provide the structure, the counseling, the management, a lot of the, you know, management support that's needed. And it's really a partnership in that way, which I think is really what makes it sustainable for them. To be able to be running it and directing it is more of a partnership.
Okay. And the reason why we're talking this week is because you have your next fundraiser coming up on September 29th.
Yes.
Yes, you have a superhero 5K,
and this is
one of two. You do two major fundraisers a year, correct?
Exactly. Okay. This is our fall fundraiser.
So we're
excited about this one. It's our seventh annual. When I started, I just had this idea. I wanted to do this race, and I wanted an event that everybody could participate in, that young, old, athletic, non-athletic. I just wanted something that would appeal to everybody and could include everybody. And so I wanted to do a race, and I had I was a new race director, and all kinds of experienced race directors and runners telling me, like, oh my God, our race is so much work. It's not worth it. You should have a bake sale. You'll raise just as much money. And I'm like, no, I feel like I'm going to do this differently. Like, I want to do this. I got this. And then, you know, 7 years later, our goal is to raise $40,000. Mm-hmm. We've become the largest race in Carbondale, and we just heard that we're probably the largest race in all of Southern Illinois.
Wow. That's impressive.
And we have 400 people at the race. And so, you know, for Southern Illinois, the typical race is, you know, 150 or 200 or 250. So it's grown a lot, and this year everyone I run into says, oh my God, you guys have done an amazing job marketing, because we all know about the race. So, you know, there's something that just sparked with this event, and we're thrilled. Maybe it's because it's my favorite event, and I just, like, unbelievably passionate about it, and have so much fun organizing it.
Yeah. Now, I think I'm going to say that the success rate is due to the – not the superhero theme per se, but the encouragement of costuming.
Oh yeah, that has been a new addition.
So yeah.
So, we came up with the superhero theme last year, and really the concept was that we really looked at what defines a superhero to us. Like, what does a superhero do? And a superhero is willing to drop anything they have going on at any moment. You know, they'll be eating a hot dog and drop it on the ground if they see somebody in need. Like, they literally will drop anything that they have going on and go save somebody. And after seeing the kids in Bangladesh year after year, like, they literally, they do need someone to save them. They need the help. And it's one of those things where you just drop your thing and go support. And either come out to the race, make a donation, however you want to support, volunteer. And as we talked about before, like, so little goes so far. You really are helping to save somebody.
Yeah.
And so it became a superhero themed event, and then we got so we got into costumes. We're making capes. We have for kids' sake capes that we make by hand. We encourage it. We have awards for the people who have the best outfits on. And then people come up with great stuff. People, a lot of tutus. I'm always surprised at tutus, but you know, anything flies.
Nice. Yeah, I was looking at photos from last year, and I was a little jealous because I love capes. I think capes should be like mandatory office wear. and I always forget. It seems like the last couple of years when I find out about this event, it's always like 2 or 3 weeks before it happens, and.
Yeah,
and you hold them on a Friday, which
right.
You know, I'm like, I want to go back. I want to make it back 1 year for the event because I'm curious. I mean, not only just to help and support, but you know, I lived in Carbondale for roughly about 12 years from college and working in the area afterwards, and I don't remember anything like that happening, like the 5K happening while I was there, and it's just one of those things that I would like to take part in to kind of see that community effort of Carbondale because, you know, when I was there, I didn't see a whole lot of that. And I am impressed that something like this has grown to be as big as it is.
Yeah. Well, Carbondale's actually also made a lot of changes this recently with the administration and the city manager right now. There's a lot more of these events happening actually.
Oh.
Like our Carbondale Eclipse was so well organized and it was so well done and so many events were happening simultaneously and people coming from out of town thought like this is such a friendly, welcoming, well organized town. So I think that a lot of things have changed since you left. This, like, you know, the city, for example, they're supportive of this event. Like, they're actual financial sponsors of this event. The city itself, the city has a team at the event. The city PR PR director, who used to actually work at Channel 3 News, Amy Fox, was on our team, outreach team. The mayor has been planning on opening the event, and he wears a cape. he just yesterday told me he had a conflict, but the city manager is going to take his place and come open the event. The fire department comes out. The police department has a team. The police department actually. Approved us closing the roads so that we could change the 5K route to end right at the pavilion. Like, that happened with this new administration, and in previous years when we had asked about that, it was always like, no way to close all the roads and to do all that for an event. That's just more of a headache for us.
Yeah.
And it is! But the new administration really wants these events and wants these things to happen and be successful. And so they are so accommodating and so supportive. I don't know. I really think there's more of this stuff going on in Carbondale now.
Well, that's good to hear. Now, how is it with, because Carbondale is primarily known for being a college town. How is the, I don't know if I would say outreach or the support from the college?
We are really connected in with the undergraduate community. And I think some of that is for Kids' Sake has always been registered as a community service that they will get hours for, and so we're on this listing, and a lot of them find us and come and do volunteer with us, and end up interning with us, and then we have whole departments and programs that end up supporting us. For example, right now the SIU Communications Department has a big team, and they are coming out, and we have an intern from there. They're one of their students is interning with us, and so we have slowly started to work more and more with SIU. Honestly, gosh, a good quarter of our runners are from SIU, our students. So I think we've integrated well, and there's still a lot more to go.
Yeah, I'm just curious because I know, again, going back 20 years ago when I was a student, it seemed like there was a big disconnect between the students and the city itself. And hopefully that has, you know, become less of a thing and that there is more community involvement on the campus.
You know, as a whole, I don't know if I can speak to that because I do hear that a lot. I do hear that people have never heard of the Long Branch Cafe and Bakery because it's, you know, out of the half a mile radius of the campus. Mm-hmm. And I do hear a lot of people who volunteer with us are just so happy to do something that's not on campus. So how much of it is, I think that there's definitely efforts to bridge, and I think there's probably a long way to go.
Okay. Hey, well, every journey starts with one step, right?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I think the mayor and the city, I think the Chamber of Commerce and the chancellor and the president of SIU, I think they meet regularly now. So that's also something that started to shift things.
Oh, that's good. And now, how big is your staff?
Okay, so I'm the only full-time person.
Okay.
And then we hired one of our interns who was at SIU. He came to fill his 10-hour shift and ended up interning with us. And last year, we hired him part-time. And he is the first person we've ever actually had on staff like that for the actual fundraising. Mm-hmm. So that's it. It's us. It's 1.5. Although we have an entire community and organization around us of amazing volunteers that, you know, that make it possible. Without them, it would just never work with 1.5 staff.
Yeah, I can't think of too many organizations that could probably put together one event, much less two a year, and as big as they are with one person. So
yeah, no, I'm very happy that we hired someone. We are tiny but mighty. That's what people tell us.
And you mentioned the 5K is your fall event. In the spring, you do an art auction.
Yes, we have a children's art auction. We're just at our 17th annual one this spring.
Wow.
And we're already collecting artwork from it. So we focus on kids' artwork because we're all about kids helping kids. As our whole program is focused on kids, we really try to encourage kids to be the ones that learn about the kids in Bangladesh and make it educational as well as an opportunity for them to learn about charity at a young age and volunteerism at a young age. So they're the primary backbone of our art auction. So we spend all of the fall months doing art workshops, presenting at art classes, sending flyers home to schools, writing press releases in the newspaper, like submit your art to us, anybody who's a student. So we get art all fall long, and we do get art from international. We get art from everywhere. We get art from Japan this year. We had art from Switzerland, from Germany, from Bangladesh. We get it from different parts of the country in the U.S. who send it to us, so it is really quite an international show. And we do all the framing ourselves. So we have, I'm so fortunate to have a volunteer who used to be a professional framer and heads up all the framing of the artwork. So we literally, every piece is a piece of artwork for him. He looks at each piece and says, what is the best color mat? What's the best frame? And he will customize it, each piece, for that piece and for that kid's artwork. It's a way of really honoring the child. And so that goes on for many months in preparation. And then in March, we hang the show up at the Long Branch Cafe and Bakery. And they've been hosts for the last 17 years. And then it's a silent auction for a month at the Long Branch. And it's become more our cultural event, whereas our 5K is more of our health event and more of this fun event. The art auction really is cultural in the sense that we have, a Bangladeshi meal. Everybody's wearing Bangladeshi clothes. All of the staff and even the volunteers from SIU are wearing Bangladeshi clothes. And then as our focus is on the arts, we have entertainment from kids primarily, entertaining the crowd from all different kinds of entertainment, and just becomes a another community builder and an honoring of the kids locally as well as internationally.
And do you have a date set for that yet?
You know, I believe it's April 28th. It's the last Friday in April. I'm pretty sure it's the 28th this year. I'm going to check.
Just, you know, I'm looking at my calendar, so.
Yes! That is such a fun event. It is April 27th.
April 27th, okay.
Last Friday in April. We are always the last Friday in April and the last Friday in September. Seems to be our niche.
It's a good consistency. So
yeah.
Now I was talking with some friends about the 5K and kind of explaining your for kids' sake, and one of them brought up an interesting question concerning this year. Is you know, recently due to the hurricanes in Texas and Florida, and let me first off say I know you originally or you have family in Texas. Were they affected at all by the hurricane?
No. There was a lot of rain, and they didn't have school or work for a week. And they helped go save people, but they were fine. They were safe. They're a little bit farther north.
Okay. Well, that's good. I was going to say, you know, we've seen a lot of money donated to help those victims.
Yeah.
Do you think because of that, this year's donations are around this time for kids' sake, will be less because people have already donated? Or do you think it could help kind of open up and give put people in a giving spirit or a giving mood? I don't know if you'll see any effect, but I'm just curious how people react in this situation.
Yeah, I hear that. So I don't hear that very much. Like, I haven't heard that in this last month, that people saying, I can't donate because I'm donating to the flood victims in the Caribbean or in Texas or in Florida. I think that maybe in Illinois we're farther away, that some people are definitely helping and sending donations, but it's not necessarily a competition for where do we put our funds. Like at the local radio station, they've been doing drives, a drive to send down donations, and then they can take them down. So there is a lot of that going on. And there are people who do really homespun fundraisers, like last minute, like, hey, this whole event goes down to Hurricane Harvey victims. So there is a lot of that, but I haven't had the feedback that, you know, I've already donated this so much this year that I can't do that this year. So you know, different years, and then I believe there's always something. There's always something else to donate to. There's so many causes, and I'm somebody who's a lover of causes and a lover of helping people. So you know, at some point, you just say, yeah, like everybody. There's so many people who need support, and whatever you can do is great. And if you can help somebody, that that's great. Then you've helped more than one person, really, because that giving spirit is, you know, it has lasting effects. And it has more effects than you realize. And so I always just encourage people to give it. Give to whatever you feel called to give, and as long as you give.
Yeah. That's a good philosophy. And I know, again, we've talked about this before. I'm going to start kind of at the beginning. How did you get involved with For Kids' Sake? And what is it about, maybe not even For Kids' Sake, specifically, but just in general, the want to help?
You know, I really never thought I was going to do nonprofit work. It's not what I saw myself doing. I thought I was going to be in business, and I thought I just liked business. And then I hooked up with For Kids' Sake right out of college, partly because of the organization that runs For Kids' Sake. I already had ties to and felt really close to. And they basically, how I personally got into it was they asked me to volunteer at the art auction. And pretty quickly they said, hey, will you, you know, direct this art auction? And at that point, I was 22. I just got out of college. I was like, sure. I thought it was a small event. Ended up like being like, wow, that was a lot of work. And I had a 3/4 time job at that point, and I spent my entire time off always working on this show throughout the year, and I did. It was much smaller at that point, but there's something in me that like lit up to be doing something, to be working so hard as a volunteer of my own like free will, and that it was helping somebody. And it was a passion I just discovered when I was volunteering. I was like, wow, I really like this. And then that same year, they were taking a trip to Bangladesh to check on the projects as they do every year, and I got to go. And then, you know, I think I was a year later, I think it was probably 23 at that point, and wow, to see it firsthand is, you know, obviously it's life-changing, because here I am now. And that was a year when I got to stay at the orphanages where all the kids were, and I was just getting involved with the charity work. But I saw the poverty in the country, and my father's from India. So we had traveled to India as well growing up, and so I was familiar with the poverty, and it always like touched something deep in me. And then being able to see the poverty on the streets, and the homelessness, the children and the suffering, and then to go to the orphanages and see these kids that were like happy and playing and wanting to play soccer with me, and like trying to teach me how to climb a coconut tree that has no limbs, by the way, you just like shimmy up it. We just had so much fun, and these kids are like happy and healthy. You know what it's like when you see a happy and healthy kid. And then I learned some of their stories, and I learned that, you know, they were homeless, or they were that beggar on the street that was trying to sell you some eggs that was really annoying. Like, these are their real stories, and these were their stories. And I learned those stories, and that for me was like, wow, this little art show I'm doing has such a huge impact. And at that point, it was hard for me to find another job that I felt so satisfied doing. Well, yeah, once I got to that point, and they just took a trip to Bangladesh, the founders. They just came back like last week, and I got to see a video of one of the girls that they videotaped. And I'd seen pictures of her, and her name was Fatima, and she's in fifth grade. And she started talking, and she had to, like, put her head down throughout her two-minute interview, like, multiple times, because she was starting to cry. And then she'd bring her head back up, and we'll keep talking, take a deep breath, and keep talking. And she said that her dad left her when she was really young, left her family, and he got remarried, but he left. Kind of abandoned them, and now her mom is really sick, and her mom just couldn't take care of her anymore. She wasn't able to work. There was no father to work and pay the income, so they were already poor, and then you put that kind of strain on the family, and they shouldn't have anything. So their family brought her to our girls' dormitory and said, like, I can't take care of her. So they brought her to our girls' dormitory, where there's like 35 other girls who are similar ages, and they grew up together. And she's got her bed, her little personal locker. She has all of her meals together. They have a woman caretaker who takes care of her. And she just said, like, I have everything I need now. You know, our caretaker takes care of us. Everything I ask for, I get. I have no more issues and no problems, but I'm so sad about my family. I mean, she's heartbroken about her own family. And just said that her family told her, like, please just study hard and stay in school. And try to be something different, because we can't provide it here. And her younger brother is in third grade, and he's still with her mom. Mm-hmm. And she said, my mom is having a really hard time just caring for the younger brother.
Mm. Now, what, with the schools there, what is the, I guess, success rate? Or do most kids finish school? Do they go on? Or...
Yeah, we have an incredible success rate, and we do provide scholarships for some of our top students to go on to school, definitely. And we, for example, like this last year, for the 10th graders, the 10th grade and 12th grade take national exams. Mm-hmm. And this year, like, all of our 10th graders at our main facility called Ibrahim Four, they all got like an A. We used to get the report that they passed. Everybody passed and nobody failed. And now we're getting the report that everybody actually scored an A. No one even got a B on this quiz. And so at this point, our school's reputation is just it's just skyrocketing. And now people are wanting to come to our school and stay in our school and take it seriously. And the kids want to study. When I go over there and I ask them like what their favorite thing is to do, they're like, well, study. And as much as I thought that they were just pulling my leg, when I really get down, they're like, no, they take it seriously because this is their chance.
Okay, you know, we've mentioned the organization, but how, if someone wants to get involved, how can they reach you? Where can they, you know, how can they make a donation? What's your chance to plug everything?
Yeah, okay, well, our website is really a great source. It's www.forkidssake.net. And there you can find out how to contact me. You can find out about all of our events. There's every event and every project we do has a way for someone to plug into no matter where you live. If you want to donate your artwork and you're a professional artist or you know a 10-year-old kid, wherever you are, send it to us. We have art submission forms online. So submit us your art. If you want to make a donation, you can do that on our website. If you feel inspired and you want to volunteer in this sense and you don't live close by and you're like, well, let me do my own little fundraiser. Let me do something that would benefit the kids somehow. You know, we've had people do that. Do call-a-thon, read-a-thons or small events in order to help. Then we have people pass the basket at their churches. People have birthday parties in honor of For Kids' Sake and send in a donation. So we have so many creative ways. As businesses sponsor the 5K, you can always just pledge a child and say, I want to support a child for a year. We have friends of For Kids' Sake who commit to a certain amount every year and say, this is my amount every year. I'm one of your friends, which means you can rely on me and count on me. So we have our friends program that people could join. That's also on our website. And I know that there's volunteering for people who don't live close by. And I always just say, we'll creatively brainstorm something. There's something.
Okay. Good to know. I will definitely keep that in mind because I have been, ever since I started this podcast, I have been encouraging people, if they're listening, hopefully, to go and do something positive. Because I think, you know, exactly. One philosophy that I have in life, and I have to remind myself of this a lot lately, is, you know, there's enough negativity in the world that I don't need to add to it. And I think that's a good, you know, just trying to change a positive outlook onto life, onto society, and doing something positive, which you seem to be doing, and I commend you for finding that passion.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think one of the things that I find like fascinating in my work is that how every action you do, every thought you have, ends up having a consequence and effect. Mm-hmm. And then that effect ends up like being the next chain reaction for the next effect. And so you have, for example, like somebody who, you know, wants to, like a great example is for the art auction, we had a raffle. And we had this like biggest raffle we've ever had was this Vespa scooter. And we were so excited about it. But man, it was hard to sell tickets. It was like, wow, we were hustling to sell all these tickets. And it was really hard. And, you know, but we ended up being a great addition to the art auction. And the woman who ended up winning that scooter, her name was Teddy, and she was a local person in Southern Illinois that I had never met. We had never met, but we knew all kinds of similar people, and she had known so much about our organization. And I have just found that, like, that spark and then that connection was made. She won a raffle. And then we had become friends over time, and she ended up, you know, helping us with a business sponsor for the 5K and then telling other people about the Superhero 5K, and she ended up telling me that she found a passion in our work, and now she wants to help spread it. And I just think, wow, like, she just bought a raffle ticket one day when she was at lunch with her grandsons. And they said, you'd be so cute on that scooter. You should buy a raffle ticket. And that now this, like, whole friendship has blossomed out of it. And somebody else's passion has been ignited. And somebody else feels like, oh, my God, I can be a part of this thing that I feel better about and that I feel is successful and is helpful and is able to keep spreading that to other people. It's just to see that, to see those chain reactions from small, simple steps that you can do. If you can track them and pay attention to them, like, wow, I met this person, like how we met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was working at a chiropractic office and you came in for an adjustment and that was probably when I was doing my first art auction. I think you've known me since the beginning.
I think so, yeah.
And you had mentioned, you know, well, we could have you on our morning show. I was like, wow, okay. And that was so exciting. And now, you know, here we are, you know, 13 years later. And here I'm still on the Channel 3 News. And that was just because you were getting adjusted and I happened to work there. I mean, it's like amazing to see how one small positive helping somebody and being in a relationship, just how far it can go and how much it blossoms.
True point. All right. Well, do you have any last words that you would like to share? Or
I say, you know, yeah, I'm with you. Do things, do positive things, help people out, find your superhero inside, and whatever you can, whenever you can drop your agenda and your issues and help someone else, you'll be a superhero. Sounds if you ever want to know more about Frickin' Safe, I'll tell you how to find me.
Yes, there will be a link on our Facebook page and all the pertinent information. Good luck with the 5K. And
thank you.
Like I said, we will probably get together again closer to the art auction and remind people about that. So,
great, and I hope to see you there.
Hope so. I'll have to check my schedule.
Yes.
If you give me plenty enough head time, I have plenty of time to double book myself somewhere else, as I am have a habit to do.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.